Happy New Year and welcome back to a brand new episode of Magical Boys. New Year, same us, just even gayer than before in 2019. It is I, one half of your hostess combo pack, DJ Kirkland, and I am joined by the other half of the combo pack, Ruben Medina.
It's me. It's the tired boy, Ruben.
Oh, real tired boy, because somebody just got back from MAG. What, yesterday?
Sunday evening. Okay. Mm-hmm. Got back from MAGFest Sunday evening. Now I have to move.
Oh, shit. That's right.
Yeah, before that was Christmas. And yeah, so I've just been like nonstop the past.
Oh, shit.
2 months. So
time to get fucked.
Uh-huh. So I'm real tired and being sick in between all of that on and off. So it's been fun.
Yeah.
Not taking care of my body.
Well, your haircut looks real cute.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you guys couldn't see this, but he just like ran his fingers through his hair.
It was I know, it looks good.
So DJ, tell me things.
Yeah,
tell me
it's things. Been a minute. Mm-hmm. What are you up to? What are you playing? What's going on?
Again, Happy New Year to you. Mm-hmm. It's been crazy just with the holidays and all that stuff. So now that that's all over, like work is settling down a little bit, which is good. Like the day job anyway, but like comics stuff is on full cylinders all the time, which is a great problem to have. It's not a complaint, just an observation. So lots of Black Mage stuff we're getting down to the wire. It has to be done by the end of February. So so yeah, that's creeping up real fast. But it's exciting because like there's an end in sight. Other than that, I've been playing nothing but Smash Bros. Ultimate nonstop. And also, I just got back into playing Monster Hunter World because my lovely fiancé bought it when it was on sale on PSN. So we have been playing that together. And it's been so much fun. It's been a lot of fun.
Whenever you say world after Monster Hunter, I hear the Digimon world. Like, from the theme, the world.
Yeah.
So stupid.
To the Monster Hunter world. Oh, Monster man, Hunter. That theme song,
Big Ass Monsters,
is good and bad all at the same time.
Monster Hunter's unapproachable.
yeah, it's...
Even with all the changes in the world, I was like, dude, this is still...
It's still kind of hard to get into.
This is still a tough-ass game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that I had beaten all of the base game content. I did not.
No,
I still had, like... another like 15-20 hours of that game to play.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot in that game.
That game has a lot of content on the disc, and then they're always doing different little events every week, so mm-hmm. there's always something to do, which is really cool. So I think it took having basically a static partner to play that game with, so I've just been playing it with my fiance, has been super fun and really helped me get into it. And for him, he's, like, really into, like, grinding and numbers and, like, crafting and all that stuff. So, like, once he got into it, and then I was like, oh, there's all this stuff from the game that I didn't really get into because I just didn't, like, access any of that content. He knows a lot about, so he kind of, like, helped me with the late game content because he kind of, like... blasted through all of that stuff that's on the base game since he was on holiday break for about 3 weeks. So did nothing but play Monster Hunter with me and some of our mutual friends. So that was good.
I love that your lovely fiance is just like systems. And I'm like, why can't I hurt this monster easier?
Yeah. And what was really funny, he was like, is your armor set good? And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, look at how cute I look. He's like, but are you like dying a lot? And I was like, well, maybe. And then he just flat out asked me, he's like, are you just crafting armor because you think that it's cute? I'm like, yes, that's exactly what I'm doing.
They really need to do, I think there's a couple, maybe Diablo does this, there's a couple games that do this where you can do, I forget what they call it usually, but it makes it so if you have stats for an armor, Mm-hmm. You can put those stats onto any other armor you want to.
Yeah.
That way it's like you can always look as cute as you want to look and not sacrifice a nice build. And I'm like, yes, every game needs this, because what happens, especially like this happens in Destiny and other games, mm-hmm. like that, is like everyone starts wearing the same armor or like really close, or like only a few different armor types because they're the only ones that are like good late game armor.
Yep.
And they look the same. And I'm just like, besides like colors maybe. So I'm like, give me every armor.
Yeah, so Monster Hunter does have that, but I think I have to beat all of the base game content first to unlock it.
Oh,
because
no.
Right now I have, like, there's the option to, like, you can equip, it's called, like, layered armor sets. So basically it's like what they call it in Final Fantasy XIV, they call it the glamour system, which is an appropriate name. So any game that has it, I just call it the glamour system. So right now I can only do that with particular pieces of armor. I can't just pick like the best stat build for my character and the weapon that I'm using, mm-hmm. and then wear something cute on top of that yet. But I know that's something that you can do, because we've watched some videos of people playing the game on YouTube, just like doing quests super fast, and I'm like, look at that cute armor. Like, that person's like wearing nothing, but they're so strong. Like, what's happening? So yeah, that system does exist in that game, but I just haven't gotten all the pieces to be able to do it yet.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So lots of that, but yeah, and then of course this Ultimate is consuming my life.
I need to play more of it. I haven't played that much. I I like one online match.
We in there. That's what's up. That's good.
Roy. It's weird. It's the only online match I played. Handheld, oddly enough,
mm-hmm.
playing as Marth, mm-hmm. and I think I was playing versus is it Roy who's basically Marth?
With the red hair?
Yes.
Yeah, Fire Marth? Yeah.
Yes, and then there's the heavy, who is heavy Marth?
Ike.
I like Ike a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. I've been using him on occasion, mm-hmm. But I was like, I won a match. They were
That's
really
so
bad.
Good.
But I was happy to win a match.
Yay!
I saw you tweet about this, and you're right. Like, Zero Suit Samus, I don't know how I feel about her in Ultimate. She doesn't feel as good to me.
Yeah, I had a better handle of her in the Wii U version of the game. Mm-hmm. But, like, Ultimate is just a different game altogether. Like, at first, everyone was anticipating that it was just going to be a port of Smash 4 and then with, like, more characters, but it's not. It's really its own game, and because a lot of the things that worked in the Wii U game don't work in Ultimate.
Well, all the heavies are really viable now.
Yeah, all the heavies are really good in this game, and it sucks for me because I play characters that are light, so yeah. I'm like, well, I guess I'm just going to die at 80% as Peach because I want to play as a princess, but I can't get too close to Ganondorf, Bowser, Donkey Kong, King K. Rool, and any other heavy character that's in the game.
Day-to-day is a mess to deal with.
Yeah. As I've been playing it, I'm understanding the systems within Ultimate a lot better, and I'm figuring out the game and how it operates. But I'm also just learning the matchups, and also there are like 70 plus characters. So like you'll be playing online, but you'll see people pick a lot of the same characters, but then you'll get one that nobody has played, or you haven't encountered anybody that's played as them, mm-hmm. and you're like, what the fuck do I even do? And you just fucking get wrecked by it for the first time. So that's always fun.
But, yeah, I spent a lot of time with Sheik just like during single player stuff, like getting comfortable mm-hmm. with her, and I was like, oh, I love playing Sheik, and I tried some online matches with Sheik, and I was like, no, I can't possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like it's funny because I have my main, so I'm like, I'm playing a lot of Peach and playing a lot of Zelda, and I'm also playing a lot of Palutena, so basically all the princesses and queens, because mm-hmm. that's what I do. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, what the fuck do I need to do against this character? So how I learn the matchups for other characters is by playing as them myself, so I can kind of mm-hmm. figure out what to do and how the timing works on those moves and all of that stuff. So I was like, at first, like, you know, like the first weekend of the game, I'm like, wow, King K. Rool is kicking my ass. So I started playing as him a couple days ago, and I'm like, wow, I have to do way less work to win as mm-hmm. this character.
I heard he's nasty.
Yeah. But God, it's so much fun. I'm having a lot of fun, and all of my friends that play competitively are like, when are you coming to tournaments? I'm like, you won't see me in tournaments until mid-March. Like, once this graphic novel is done and it's off to Oni and Emerald City is over, then you'll start seeing me, like, playing Smash in tournaments and then also having, I don't know, a social life? Maybe? Yeah. But, Smash, relationships, friends, all those things will happen after Emerald City Comic Con. Oh, man. But other than that, yeah, that's all that I'm playing currently. But what about you? Talk to me about MAG. Talk to me about all the things.
So, yeah, I was just... I guess my gaming section is going to be talking about lots of indie games. I was at MAGFest over the weekend, which is, like, the dopest. It's still... It's becoming... It's there's two things. I'm getting older, so my patience is, like, less for, like, young, drunk bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that con's just getting bigger, and I think more people are finding out about it and, like, really in love with it. And excited to go to it, which is great. But, like, we had an atrium room this year, which is in, like, the atrium room. They all have balconies, like, the center area,
mm-hmm.
which is normally great. It's so rad. You'll just go out on your balcony and have a coffee and, like, listen to a quartet play Zelda music. It's the best. It's one of my favorite things about the con. This year, though, like, there were just people being so loud in those common areas, like,
yeah.
all sorts of all throughout the night, that it made it really hard to sleep. Which sucks.
Yeah.
So if there's going to be some feedback from MAGFest, I'll be like, y'all got to find a way to properly enforce people not yelling and screaming in, like, the main big, like, because it's a huge open air lobby
right.
area
right.
for the
right.
hotel that all of the atrium rooms, like, have balconies out to.
Mm.
And it's just, like, it was so bad sound wise. But otherwise, that con is great. It's just, like, definitely a lot of, like, younger kids drinking and acting out of control. And as I get older, I'm just like, I want it to be quiet and just enjoy things because I'm lame. But one of my favorite things at MAGFest is they have this thing called MIVS, which is, what does it stand for? MIVS is MAGFest Indie. Nope, it's not the Indie Arcade. God, I don't remember what it stands for. MAGFest Indie Video Game Showcase, which is really rad because basically it's just a bunch of people that bring, I think I've talked about it before, they bring their indie game, whether it's out already on, like, a platform, if it's on, like, Steam, mm-hmm. early access, if it's, like, in alpha and you're just playing a build off your laptop, all, like, a range of all sorts of different, like, levels of a game being done. So I wanted to just, like, highlight a few that were really cool or that, yes, like,
please.
Really stood out to me.
Please.
I didn't get to play everything, but I played the couple of games I played. These were really cool. There was a game called Unbeatable, which was, like, I think it's going to be, like, sort of a rhythm game, but there's, like, walking parts in between. Mm-hmm. So it seems like there's going to be story elements and, like, I don't know if there'll be... They didn't have any dialogue choices in the build that they showed.
Yeah.
But there's, like, walking through areas and talking to NPCs, and then you'll trigger into these, like, sort of combat rhythm game things. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't necessarily that there's anything notable or different about how it's handling the rhythm game aspect of it, but the art is super cute, like, really, really cute. Which is, and it's, like, very anime cute, which is exactly why I was like, I'm gonna play this. So that was dope. There was a game called, I think it's actually on iOS already, called Lost in the Dark. Let me see if I can find this. Oh no, Into the Dark, Narakon by Orkpunk. It's this really interesting roguelike. Where, like, everything in the game is a very, very simple, like triangle patterns. Like, if you took a square and you split the square into a bunch of triangles, but then, like, how you color those triangles makes different patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in the game is, the art's that way. I'm actually gonna send you a screenshot so you can see what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, let me take a look-see. Where is the chat window? Where did it go? Where did I put you?
But you're basically, like, slowly moving through a forest towards, like usually it's, like, I guess it's a princess, basically. You're, mm-hmm. like, hearing her sound, but you're getting items and stuff along the way. You're getting, like, different weapons and different magic casting. And you move sort of in a grid manner freely, but then when enemies are nearby, it locks in that movement to being turn-based. And it's just like visually really interesting as a game.
Oh, this is cool. Yeah, I like right? that. That's
like the cool. design is really, really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's actually out on iOS already.
Okay.
So I might need to grab it because it was just really cool. Like just I think when you go to an indie space, like I saw, I don't know, probably like 3 or 4 different games that were all sort of like variations on air hockey, which is like really common in indie spaces, and which is fine. But for me, like with indie games, the best way to stand out is to have like an interesting. You're not going to have usually the money or the staff to have like a really high polished looking game,
right?
So having a really strong artistic language or graphic design sense. Or art direction in general tends to be like what gets me to like really notice a game. So that was really cool. That's that's what I just. It's Into the Dark. No, what is it called? Yeah, Lost in the Dark. No, Into the Dark. Sorry, Into the Dark. Narakon. Really cool. That was dope. That's an iOS. I played a little bit of Heaven Will Be Mine, which is the lesbian mecha game.
Yes,
that's basically like a visual novel.
Mm-hmm.
Art's really cool. The game seems really interesting. Playing that game on a show floor that's loud is like not the right way to experience it. So I played a little bit of it and was like, this seems really cool. The writing's really good. And they came out on iOS a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's been on PC like all year, basically. But now that it's on iOS for like $3, I think I'm going to grab it because that's like a good place for me to experience. Like, I want that sort of game on Switch or iOS.
Yeah.
And I think, if you haven't looked at that or played it, it's literally like a cool, weird mecha visual novel with a bunch of like lesbian pilots. And it's really cool. So the two last things. One thing wasn't in the indie area, which blew my mind. There is this guy. I'm just trying to remember if I have his name. I think it's William Cage. Yeah, William Cage. K-A-G-E. He created a thing called Six Engine. And what it is it is basically, it's a game engine inspired by SNES classics like Final Fantasy VI, Chrono Trigger, Lufia, and more. And it's all in JavaScript, which means you can play it in a browser.
Yeah.
If you have an Android phone, you can actually play it in a browser on an Android phone. And because it's all on in browser, like, when you save a game, you can do a URL save state where it's, mm-hmm. like, you save your game by creating a URL. I can go to a completely different computer, plug that into the browser, and start where it was. So he's also a composer. So with, like, a bunch of different, like, basically using sound fonts, which I guess the best way to explain the sound font. Sound fonts are, like, the reason why Kirby games sound like Kirby games,
mm-hmm.
is because, like, they're being composed using a sound font that's, like, sort of the artistic direction or the musical stylistic choice for Kirby games.
Yeah.
And like Animal Crossing sounds like Animal Crossing because of the same thing. And so the idea is that you call those sound fonts more, mm-hmm. or less. This is my understanding of it, at least. I could be wrong. So correct me, someone out there, if I am. And so what people have done is they've gone into these games and broken down all of the sounds in them to create sound fonts. That way you can recreate or do new music, but make it sound or feel very much like that game.
Mm-hmm.
So he has an album that he's done this with, like, a bunch of different things. But the demo to show off this engine, he made a prequel to Final Fantasy VI. And he just had it at his booth in, like, the Artist Alley area. And he was just like, play this. He had a bunch of, like, little tablets set up with controllers and headphones. And he was like, hey, if you like Final Fantasy VI, check this out and listen to the music. And I think you can play it online, I think, sixengine.com. It was just super impressive that this guy built this whole engine.
That's really cool.
It's just really cool that it means, like, that engine, I don't know if he's going to make it open source, but if so, that means, like, the capability for people who like SNES-era RPGs like Final Fantasy VI to just, like, create these games that you can just play in a browser or anything that runs JavaScript, which these days is like everything. It's just really cool. The last thing was this game called One Step from Eden. There is a demo. If you go to onestepfromeden.com, it's also, I think, you can wishlist it on Steam. It is, the art is really cute, really like kind of like low poly, not even low poly, like 16-bit-ish art, really rad. I'm actually pulled the website because I think they might have a better way to explain the game than I have. Also, the best way to explain the game is it's Mega Man Battle Network.
Yeah, I'm looking at a little video of it right now.
Yeah, and they have a Kickstarter up as well, which I need to kickstart. I need to donate to. But yeah, if you've ever played Mega Man Battle Network, I think Mega Man Battle Network was a 3x3 grid on each side.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
Combat was like sort of real time, I think. Like, if they attacked you, you can move out of the way. So this is a similar idea, except the combat is incredibly fast, like almost like shoot 'em up fast.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is they describe it as being a roguelike and a deck builder as well. So you have a deck, like the left side of your screen is basically like a set of cards. And then you have two slots. Usually it's like your X and O button or your Q and W. And those are the two like spells you have access to actively. And when you use it, it discards from the deck. And like the next thing in your deck that you see on the left side of the screen slides down. It's almost like the Q window in Tetris.
Yep, yep.
And each one of those spells has a mana cost. And you have a constantly recharging mana bar at the bottom. So you're always able to do like basic damage on the grid. But you're also casting magic constantly. And some of those magic, some of those magic attacks are buffs. Some of them are AoE attacks. Some of them are very specific, like single target hits. And so it gets really hectic in a really cool way.
Yeah.
Very, very quickly as you are attempting to. What's cool is that like every attack that's going to happen on your side, you have like visual things that sort of show you like it's about to happen. You usually have like a half second or something to move out of the way. The gameplay is so fun. It's really hectic. Like when I was playing it, I was like not looking at my spell, my deck at all. There is absolutely no way I would have been able to early on.
Yeah.
But I imagine once you get more used to it, you kind of get used to watching the screen and watching what you're dodging from and looking at your deck so you can better manage your magic.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever your deck empties, you have a shuffle delay so that you can't cast during a shuffle. And at any point, you can also reshuffle your deck if you don't like the set of cards that you have, like the order that they're in. But again, you have the you get penalized for that shuffle delay. It's so cool and interesting and fun. Like they just did a really, really good job of like A, making it cute, B, making the gameplay feel really fun and tight.
Yeah.
And also having like a pretty deep, interesting level of gameplay. Watching it, I immediately, the bosses that you fight in the demo, instead of it being like a multiple enemies on the other side,
mm-hmm.
the bosses you fight are like single characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they, I'll have to go see if they say anything about this, but I could see like massive PvP potential for this game
mm-hmm.
if they find a way to like balance it well, which would take a lot of work, but it's so fun. It was definitely, I think, my favorite thing I played while I was at MAGFest. It was really cool.
Yeah, it looked really cool from what I just watched. It's super hectic and super fun. And I was like, Mega Man Battle Network, because I really like those games. I thought those games were super fun. That one is like, this game looks very twitchy. Like, in like, you have to be like super, super like, wow, I just had a brain fart. But yeah, you just have to like, really pay, you have to really just like pay attention to what's happening, because like there's a lot that's happening on the screen all at once there. But yeah,
it it's definitely
really cool.
Like a twitch game for sure.
Yeah,
or a twitchy game. It looks like they have a stretch goal for Switch in 2020,
mm-hmm.
which could be cool if that happens. But yeah, it's, if you're into Mega Man Battle Network or just think that sounds interesting, go play the demo. I think it's a PC demo. Go check out the Kickstarter. I sat down to play it and I was immediately like, I want to play that again. Like, I want to keep playing this.
Mm-hmm.
So just a lot of, and there was like, and that's literally like, I played Splitty Robot again, which Splitty Robot won Best of Show last year, which is a really, really cute, really smart platformer where you play a little robot and you can split yourself vertical or horizontal. And that game, like, still the build, I think the build they had this year seemed like it had a couple new areas in it. And that game just is really smart. It's just, it's a really, really cool puzzle platform. And this is like, this is like maybe not even 10% of the games that were there. There were so many games I saw there that looked really cool that I just did not have time to play.
Yeah.
So if you like indie games, if you like seeing that stuff, and getting to play it, and not just getting to play it, but also like getting to sit down with the, not sit down, but like getting to talk to the developers, and not just the devs, but sometimes like the musician for the game or an artist. MAGFest is such a cool opportunity to do that. And I definitely recommend that con if you can. Oh, I also just wanted to shout out too. I didn't get a chance. I had mentioned on my Twitter that I was at MAGFest. My wife, still weird sounding to say all the time. Also, I can't not hear Borat. My wife Erin, she was in the artist alley, and so I think I told people to go like go see her and say hi if I'm there, if they're fans of the podcast. So she said that she was like, yeah, at some point, like a couple, not a couple of guys, but like a couple, came up to the table and were like, hey, are you Ruben's wife? And they're like, we're really big fans of the show, of Magical Boys.
Aww,
yay. Which is really sweet. So sorry I missed you guys. I was probably nursing a hangover or somewhere else. But thank you so much for coming by and saying hi to my wife and her awesome art. Also, I posted something on Twitter about like one of the like bands or orchestra like groups I was watching, and someone reached out, I guess like the Triforce Quartet, who is always super rad every year at MAGFest.
Mm-hmm.
I guess their brother, I guess, is in the quartet and is a big fan of Magical Boys. So was really, really cool.
That's awesome.
To be told, I didn't get a chance to go say hi to them.
Mm-hmm.
But that was really cool. So thank you for that. And reaching out and saying hi. Like all of those people and bands and stuff, they make MAGFest like the really magical rad thing it is. So thank you. And as far as other stuff, I played some Into the Breach on the plane. That game's really good. Everyone talking about how good that game is was not wrong. It is way more chess-like than I realized.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was a tactics game. The thing that I didn't realize is that when the enemy has their turn, they do their movement and then they signal their attack. They don't make their attack on their turn initially. They move and then they show you exactly
what they're
going to attack.
Yeah.
And then you have your turn. So it makes it like even more chess-like, even more like, that game is more about like figuring out the puzzle of where to be and what to do and how to like chain things together than it is about just like normal tactics. What I like about it is like you can go through a tactics game and like do things well and win fights, but that game really wants you to like do it as perfectly as possible. And by doing that, where they show you what the enemy is going to do and the enemy will always do it, and then giving you a turn to mitigate.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really, it makes it feel like you sit there during your turn and you think just so much more.
Yeah.
Because you're like, okay, I don't want this building to get hit, so I need to do knockback damage so they attack nothing. And if I move out of the way of this, I won't get hit, but this building will. So can my guy take this damage? Is there a way for me to like knock back one of their guys into the line of sight for that so they hit their own person?
Mm-hmm.
It's just really, really smart. And then I'm also just continuing to play Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which that game is pretty good.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but positive things about that game.
I don't think I'd give a fuck if there is no Cassandra, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing, is that, like, you come across your brother, like, the way that the game plays out, whichever twin you don't pick, you come across them later in the game, and I don't, the little bit I heard of Alexios's performance is, it's fine, I'm sure it's fine for that, but I'm just like, he just sounds like an angry guy.
Yeah.
And I'm just not interested. Like,
yeah,
I've had enough of that all the time.
Right.
So playing as Cassandra, who's just like so sassy and has so much personality. Also, she's beautiful and has giant arms. And I don't remember if I've talked about this previously on the show, but like what I like so much in that game is because they don't make any of the NPCs like straight or gay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can have sex with anyone that your other counterpart can have sex with,
mm-hmm.
or instigate relationships with. The game definitely has, and this is like a bad thing to a degree. There are definitely far more women in that game, NPCs down to clan, that you come across than men, from what I've seen. Because like I've looked at like straight, like or not straight, but like male relationships to go after, and there doesn't seem to be nearly as many as female ones.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the relationships in this game, they're not really relationships as much as hookups. Like, mm-hmm. it'd be cool. I would love for the game to actually have things that could be relationships where you continue to hook up with the same person.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's in the game, really, at all, that I've seen. But if you're playing as Cassandra, there are so many women in that game that are down to clown that it just feels like fucking everyone is gay.
Yeah.
And it just feels like, cool, Greece is nothing but gay women who all want to fuck. This is great. Where I feel like if I was playing as Alexios, it'd be like, oh shit, I found a gay dude. I have to fuck him. Like, there's no one else.
I don't have any other choice. I gotta.
Yeah, I gotta do it. So, but like, also just like props that like they did what no one else has been able to do, which is just make it so all of the NPCs don't have a sexual preference either way.
Right.
That way it's open to anyone who wants to play however they want to play.
Yeah. How about that, hon?
It's real easy. Looking at you, BioWare.
Yeah.
For the next, I don't know, Mass Effect, whenever that happens. The next Dragon Age, because that is happening.
Yeah, another Dragon Age game is happening at some point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so hopefully they get that together.
Yeah, the teaser for it. So I'm like, please just let me like have sex with whoever I want to, mm-hmm. that is like possible to have sex with.
Right.
Or love on, or whatever.
Yeah. I support it. I definitely support it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But so, since you were at MAGFest, you weren't really watching anything, more or less just experiencing and listening to things.
I was living.
Yeah. I was living my life, not watching anime. Living.
No, I'm so behind. Like, I can't even express to you how behind I feel on everything.
Like
right
how fucked
now.
Like how fucked all of your cues are and everything.
I watched some JoJo.
Yeah.
I watched a little bit of part 5. Yeah. They're doing a good job. Like, I feel like it's definitely not like as much attention to detail as some of the previous. I think they have a lot of their A team, I think, is working on a different series.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good. Like the Black Sabbath fight, which is like the first major stand fight in part 5.
Mm-hmm.
They did a great job with it. Looks fucking great. It's terrifying. It's so good.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad that it's holding up really well, even if they don't have the A squad working on it.
They're doing a good job with it. Nice. I got to finish Bloom Into You. I got to finish... probably not since last time we talked. Whatever Bunny Senpai show from last season.
Yeah.
That show's good.
Yeah?
That show's really good. Like, the Bunny Senpai thing is, like, a small thing in the first episode, and there's a thing that explains it, and then it's not really a thing after that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, the best... It's, like, it's a good, like, supernatural occurrences, like, small-scale supernatural... It reminds me of Haruhi in some aspects.
Okay.
Where it's, like, Haruhi was, like, everything's normal except these small paranormal things that happen, and then it's, like... They're usually like they usually have to do with the characters in some fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And this has a similar, like, when paranormal stuff is happening, it's usually some sort of manifestation of like someone's feelings or emotions or depression or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually like it's really well written. It looks pretty good. That show's like pretty good.
Have to give it a shot.
Gotta finish that. Mm-hmm. Gotta finish Bloom Into You. Gotta Mob Psycho season 2 started yesterday.
Yep.
Promised Neverland starts in Japan on my birthday. What's up? Happy birthday to me.
Happy
January
birthday
10th.
To you. Very
but
soon.
I think we get the first episode here January 11th.
Okay.
So I'm like, I'm so behind and new stuff is starting already.
Yeah.
But haven't really been watching anything. What about you? What are you watching?
So I was just, just scrolling through Netflix looking for things, and one of my friends' boyfriends was saying that they were watching Sirius the Jaeger, which is on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And I'd seen it come up on my queue because it's like, you watch all this fucking anime. How about this show? And I saw it and watched the kind of like the little trailer that's in the, when you're like surfing through the Netflix queue, it'll start playing, like auto-playing a trailer. So I start watching that, and it doesn't really tell you anything. It's just like a bunch of like audio clips of them speaking with like footage laid over top. But it's really cool. Like, it's really, really pretty. It's really bloody and super violent. But Let's see. I think it's PA Works. Yes, PA Works is the studio that's animating it, and it looks amazing. It
They're
looks so good.
Pretty solid.
Yeah, and especially if they got that Netflix money. So it's really cool. So basically what it is, it's I'm just looking at the plot synopsis overview that's in Wikipedia. It says, in 1930, a group of vampires leave China and flee to Japan. They are followed by a group of vampire hunters called Jaegers, undercover being the staff of the quote-unquote V Shipping Company. Among them is a young, serious man called Yuli, a werewolf whose home was destroyed by vampires. In the past, members of the serious royal family was chosen by the Oracle to be the agent of God and permitted to possess a mysterious holy relic known as the Ark of Sirius, which is a gift from God, could exert power over all things. Because of its potential, the Sirius people became under attack from a group seeking its power, so it was sealed away in a secret location never to be used again. Yuli and the Jaegers engage in deadly battle with the vampires over possession of the relic. So the story's a little generic, which is fine. The characters are really cool. The dub is pretty damn good. But like, it's animated beautifully. Like, it's like top notch stuff. I've been enjoying it. I think I've watched like 3 or 4 episodes of it, but, yeah, like it's serviceable. Like, the plot is serviceable, but it's really nice to look at. So I've been watching that.
I really liked the, like, real fucky and fun costume designs in it.
Yeah, Kino Nishimura did the character designs for the series. And for those of you that are listening to the show and are like, who the fuck is Kino Nishimura? You should Google her. She is one of, like, the OG Capcom artists. So she did a lot of the art for the Capcom versus SNK games. So if you see the art for Capcom versus SNK 2, you'll see a lot of Kino's art in that game. And it's so good. Kinu also did the art for a lot of the 999 games. She did the art for those, and Kinu also did the art for Code of Princess, which is that game that, like, side-scrolling beat-em-up that came out on the 3DS. That's also on Switch. She's a great character designer. Love her stuff. It's really cool. So the character designs are really fun to look at. I really like it a lot. You guys should check it out. It's on Netflix. 13 episodes. Yeah, definitely would recommend it.
On the other side, I heard that Hero Mask is trash. I haven't watched it yet. I heard it's terrible, though.
I watched the first episode, and I will never get those 22 minutes back. It was, like... And it was animated by Studio Pierrot. So, like, Studio Pierrot is also the studio that, like, animated Naruto and other, like, Shonen Jump anime stuff.
And, very uneven.
And, yeah, when Pierrot, like... gets their shit together, like, it looks really good. But when they don't, it's kind of all over the place. And the editing in Hero Mask, the first episode, is so bad.
I saw that car chase in the tunnel where there's an edit that's, like, every quarter second.
Oh, my God.
The camera changes.
Oh, my God.
Like, I'll have to tweet about it or, like, find the tweet.
It's so bad.
Did I send you... Someone posted... someone talking about that edit posted... it's some scene from one of the Taken movies.
Yes. Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's... Where it's like... Someone just like climbing over a fence and it's like 20 different camera shots.
It's like... It's more, I feel like. It's maybe like 10 seconds and it's probably like 30 camera shots.
It's so,
like,
bad.
They couldn't make it good looking, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, Liam Neeson climbing over a chain link fence looked boring or something. So they're like, here's a billion. It was the worst. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Hero Mask is bad. So I will not be watching any more of Hero Mask. What else have I watched? I'm waiting, and we're going to have to wait for a little bit for season 2 of Kakeguri to come out. Because season 2 is starting in Japan, like, this month. So, since Netflix has the rights to it, we're going to have to wait a couple months until, like, it's done, and then it comes out. But, God, I'm ready for Yumeko to fucking wreck me again. What a good show.
The Gambling Queen.
Gambling Queen. Queen of Scamming. If you haven't watched that show, you guys should watch it. It's fantastic. And the live action is even better. Like, it's so good.
It's the live action show is actually, like, I like the anime. But the live action show,
oh my God, it's so good.
Because it's so extra. Like, yeah. The anime is not nearly as extra as a live-action show, I think, because it's live-action, and you're having to watch... You know that real people had to for real do this shit in front of a camera?
Like, the anime is extra in a very, like, anime way, but, like, seeing that, but amped up in, like, a live-action setting is wild. So, that show was a trip, so you should definitely watch that if you haven't watched it already. I've only ever watched the first episode of Mob Psycho 100, and I really loved it. And
so good.
I started watching it because I watched it like a year ago, and I watched the first episode again today to like refamiliarize myself with it. So I'm going to be watching that so I can jump into season two. And in the meantime, because you'd been talking about The Promised Neverland for such a long time, I finally started reading it now that the new Shonen Jump app is incredible. So I've just been reading that. I'm on like chapter 10. It's so good. Like, that first chapter was a solid open. Like, that, after I read that first chapter, I'm like, I'm in.
It goes places. Like, that's the thing, is that like, you read that first chapter, you're like, oh man, what a fucking twist. Oh my god, okay, I'm shook. And then literally it's like, every like 10, 20 chapters, there's a moment where you're just like that's just as much, where you're just like, oh fuck, and it never feels like it's too much, or it's like, it's not, they didn't earn it. Like, I'm caught up, and there's just a massive moment that just happened, and I'm just like licking my lips, I'm just like, give me more. I'm so excited for the show, like, because it means that everyone I've been yelling at to read it, who won't read manga, will have to watch it and understand how good it is.
Yeah, so I'm trying to read as much as I can before the anime starts so that I can just, like, consume it and just love it and all that stuff. But, I've been really enjoying it a lot. So, so that'll wrap it up for that section, and we'll take a quick... Or do you have something else you do want to add?
Well, before we go to news, did we talk about Spider-Verse on the show?
No, we haven't. So, like, let's take a really quick break and talk about Spider-Verse.
Okay,
cool. And we're back, and we're talking about motherfucking Spider-Verse.
I just, like, let me just say, kisses, chef's kisses. That's the best Spider-Man movie ever been made.
It's probably, like, one of, like, the best superhero movies of the year, and 2018 was, like, so fucking long. It felt like it was 10 years that, like, I forgot that Black Panther came out at the beginning, February of 2018, and it felt like that movie had been out for, like, 5 or 6 years, but wow, what a way to, like, end the year. Wow, what a moment. So, like, good.
It is, like, I love that writing team. Mm-hmm. I think it was it Lord or Miller? Chris Miller, Spider-Verse. Let's see. Producers, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who, if you've never watched Clone High, the one season...
So good!
MTV animated TV show. One of my favorite comedies ever.
So good.
It's so, so good. These boys have been tearing it up. The Lego movies are great. Look, everything they do is great. Miles is perfect.
Yeah.
It's the visually probably the most beautiful movie I've ever seen from an animation standpoint.
Yeah.
Like, I love a lot, but I think it's the first time I've sat in a theater that I can remember, honestly, and literally been taken aback by, like, what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
And, like, how is this happening?
Yeah.
How does this look like this? How is this pretty? How does it have so much character? Like, I don't know, like, Pixar, fucking get out, like, look out, like, because...
Yeah, like, there were two moments of 2018 to where I was in the movie theater and was like, wow, but, like, in different ways. Obviously, at the beginning of the year, it was Black Panther for me, just because of, like, seeing, like, this, like, fictional... uncolonized version of Africa where, like, black people get to be, like, black and from Africa and get to, like, be all of those things without the influence of white people destroying societies and enslaving people. So seeing that and then it being like such a spectacle to open up 2018 was like insane. Like I cried like 3 times watching that movie. Mm-hmm. And then it was Spider-Verse being like a technical marvel, but not only that, but like being such a solid story from start to finish, such smart writing. Like every shot was like breathtakingly beautiful. Like, and there's so much stuff to like go back through and have to like, and like scrub through that movie and just like look at like each frame. There's like, it's so rich with like information and like texture and just like, it's like dripping in just like its own luxuriousness of how like rich and fantastic it all is. And seeing that, but like having an Afro-Latino person like at the center is even better. Like,
yeah,
I saw so many like tweets with like little black boys like wanting to be Spider-Man, and that was like, I'm not gonna cry like I did when I cried over about Black Panther last year, but it was very much like that same feeling for me. So like, it was so cool to see that.
Like, we both know I have a lot of Spider-Man
feelings. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All the time. So I cried, like, a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, I'm going to cry over this. but, yeah, like, seeing Miles Morales, who's, like, this young, like, Latinx kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're being Spanish in the movie, not translated. It's just there.
Was amazing.
Like, him just talking to his mom.
Yeah.
And him expressing in Spanish, like, as a bilingual character was so cool. Like, again, like being even at like almost 33, being able to see someone be Spider-Man that's not Peter Parker, who I love Peter Parker.
Yeah.
But like someone who is closer to me.
Yeah.
Is still so powerful.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I'm old enough to be sort of past that moment of like, I think it really impacting me the same way it impacts a kid.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, can't even imagine for kids how that is. I love that the entire message of the movie is like, anyone can wear the mask.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about like taking on the responsibility of being Spider-Man.
Yeah.
They did an amazing job of telling the story with a pretty complicated setup.
Yeah.
With a lot of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was perfect about it. The only things I like, literally there's like 2 things I can think of that I didn't mind at all, but like, I could have seen gone a different way that I would have liked better.
Are we getting into spoiler territory with that?
I don't think so. I think Penny Parker is seen obviously in the trailers, right?
So yeah, that's fine.
So yeah, I'm not gonna because there's a big surprise that I do love, and if people haven't seen it yet, I'm not gonna spoil it.
Yeah.
There's a character that I wasn't expecting them to be who they were.
Yeah.
And when they revealed it, I was just like, this is amazing, and I'm very horny for it.
Yeah.
But Penny Parker, I think, I understand why she was portrayed as, like, a very kind of stereotypical shorthand, like, representation of anime.
Yeah.
But I wish they had gone with the sort of Jake Wyatt interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually not interpretation, right? Jake Wyatt was, like, one of the first people, if not the first people, that worked on the Penny Parker Spider-Man stuff, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, Penny is, I think, Japanese-American in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in Japan, if I remember. It's very referential to Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Mm-hmm.
She's in her teens. Like, I think one of the covers, like, literally has, like, in her class, all of the other Eva pilots are definitely, like, in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand, I guess, maybe they wanted to counter Gwen a little bit.
Yeah.
By not having another teenage girl there, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, like, I feel like they could have gone with a different visual style for her that was still anime.
Yeah.
That felt less like how to draw manga.
Yeah. That's probably my biggest criticism of it, too. I think you could have gotten that same effect, but have maybe even gone something, like, I think one of the, someone that I follow on Twitter, she's an artist and a concept artist. Her name is Jessie Lamb. She did like some quick like draw overs in kind of like different anime styles, quote unquote.
Yes.
Like, there was one that kind of looked very similar to, like, Saber Marionette J in terms of the face. There was one that looked more like Mako from Kill la Kill, which I think would have worked really well for it.
Yeah, the Kill la Kill style was really cool. Mm-hmm. They did it.
And there was one that looked more like Ava, and then there was one that looked like Love Hina. But yeah, the one that looked like Kill la Kill, I think, would have really matched Penny tonally how she was in the film. I think
this
matched.
Is incredibly nitpicky.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I think it sort of comes from a place of, like, seeing the, like, kind of hyperactive, hyper-cutesy anime stereotype always in American media.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's what people are familiar with, which I also understand, like, that's why it was used, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And just wishing that it had been... Everything else was, like, represented so earnestly in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
It just made me, like... Again, I still loved Penny Parker in the movie, and I thought it was great. That was just the one, like, super nitpicky thing where I was like, I do kind of wish that they had gone a different route with it that wasn't so stereotypically what Western audiences think of when they think of anime in Japan.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, they play Gwen younger than I feel like she tends to, if not, no, I guess maybe that's right, the same age.
Because she was older than him in... She's older than Miles in the movie.
Yes, which they should be.
Yeah.
I feel like they played at, like, some romantic tension there, possibly.
A little bit, yeah.
Which, it's like, I feel... I would prefer... I think it would be cool, like, to just make it friends.
Yeah.
Just because I always feel like that feels so forced to me, always.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I like to do in my stories, unless it's, like, specifically, like, oh, this is a romance thing. Like, but...
Yes.
I just felt like... I don't think we would have gained anything... by there being, like, a romantic situation in Spider-Verse. Like, I think, like, I appreciate that it was just, like, a nod to it, but, like, not like, super, it wasn't a super huge plot point.
It's weird because I simultaneously am like, oh, that would be cool to have a biracial relationship on screen.
Yeah.
And I'm down for that. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I'm always just like, I think when you have, like, a male character and a female character in a movie, and it feels like they always have to be romantically inclined to each other.
Yeah.
It's, like, a little bit exhausting to me at this point.
Oh, no, I agree.
I think it's also in headcanon, Gwen is, like, at least, like, bi or gay in my headcanon, mm-hmm. I feel like. Definitely, like, I retweeted some art earlier of her, like, kissing Mary Jane's hand, and I was like, yes.
Yeah, it's like, that's the shit right here. The shit right here. That's what we're here for.
That's the good shit. But, I mean, mm-hmm. like, again, like, overall, like, these are the most nitpicky.
Yeah.
Oh, also, I feel like Peter should have had a reaction to seeing Gwen. I'm just gonna put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Peter, the main Peter Parker for the movie.
Yeah.
Just being like, you should... I feel like seeing her would be, based on Gwen in your world, in the comics,
mm-hmm.
probably an emotional reaction of, like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Also, her being so much younger than Gwen in his... would have been in his world and stuff, too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is not spoilers in the movie. Like, Spider-Man comics, original Gwen Stacy stuff was, like, Pete knows but doesn't know that he kills her by accident.
Mm-hmm.
By, she's falling, and he goes to, like, webline, zip, save her, and the, like, G-force of doing that snaps her neck and kills her.
Mm.
So it's, like, a very, very tragic thing before Mary Jane ever comes into the picture. Mm-hmm. And so I was, like, kind of, I thought about it later, and I was like, oh, I feel like Peter would have had... a strong reaction to seeing Gwen. But that also would have been, like, a lot to get into with so much else going on in the movie.
Right, right.
So, a lot of Spider-Man feelings, but even with all these, like, small... Not even all these, like, these tiny, tiny... These are, like, the nerdiest of nitpicks.
The nerdiest little nitpicks, yeah.
Like, I'm gonna go see it again this week, probably. Yeah. I loved it.
Man, it was so good. It was so, so good. Like, yeah. I've never, like, wanted to draw Spider-Man fan art before, but now I think I might... make one
that
make a piece for score, the soundtrack score is perfect.
Soundtrack, god, if you there's someone they posted on what I love about this is like I think that Pixar tends to do, which sucks, is that when creators and people make these movies they have to like not say anything about their process in making it.
Yeah.
And Sony has been like, yo, if you worked on this movie, fucking post about it and like post stuff from the production. And they posted a video of like how they did some of the score, where like they had an orchestra play a song and they had a DJ cut the music and remix it and scratch it, and it's so fucking good. The score is great, everything's great.
Yeah. So what a movie, so good, so very, very good. Yeah. And they say that stories about people of color don't sell.
Oh my God. Get out of here. Get out of here.
Let's leave that shit in 2018. All right. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some shit that's happening in the world of games and all that other bullshit.
Oh, maybe something happened that's like real in our wheelhouse.
Yeah, guess what?
Really related to what this show's about.
Yeah, guess what?
Did we even say what the show's about? We didn't say at the top of this show.
Oh, yeah, it's about video games.
And anime. And anime. And nerd stuff.
And all that good shit in between.
From a queer perspective.
And
POC when possible.
Yeah, and guess what? Soldier 76 is gay.
Yeah. He gay.
He real gay.
He gay.
It's confirmed, y'all.
God, it just, I'm loving, like, people, like, rewriting all of his voice lines to be, like, gayer. So good.
Oh, man. So, yeah, so Blizzard just announced, because there's a new, like, story for Anna that features our good boy, Soldier 76.
Talks about a past relationship.
Mm-hmm. And that past relationship was with a man.
With a man.
With a man.
And a lot of straight dudes are very upset about
it. Yeah, and all the straights are real mad. They are big, big mad about it. And sorry.
You gotta say, like, main character, the icon character, the character that is, like, the logo for Overwatch League, she gay.
Yeah.
And then, I would say, like, probably, at least from marketing perspectives, the second most visible character, the one who, if you pre-ordered the game,
came with
you got
statue.
A big old gay statue of him.
He gay.
He gay.
He gay. He gay. Big old statue, be gay.
The character that every like straight Call of Duty fan, who's the most like straightforward FPS shooty character possible, he gay.
Like the definition of like Call of Duty and Halo, he gay.
His gun's gay. If he shoots you with his gay bullets, you gay.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna be gay.
The straights are shaking when anytime you pick Soldier 76, you gay.
When he drops his healing.
Gay
thing.
I mean they were really dropping hints from the beginning, because I mean, let's be real, like a DPS hero that can heal you, and we all know that all gays are healers.
This is true.
All of them.
If you heal, you gay.
It's true. Everybody gay. Everybody gay in that game. But yeah, there have been like two camps with this whole thing. Some people think of it as like, oh, it's just a cash grab and blah blah blah, this and that, and how like, oh, they're just trying to like pander to queer people and this and that. And on the other side, which is kind of what I'm leaning to, is with Overwatch specifically, we've known this from the get-go that like all the characters give you just enough information for you to kind of imprint the rest on them, like as a community, as being part of the fandom, you kind of like fill in the gaps for the rest of the heroes. So I know for a lot of folks, like people have been shipping Reyes and Soldier 76 from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's not too much of a stretch. It's just now that it's like actually canon, but I totally 100% absolutely get the fact that like, why after 3 years of this game being out, is this just now a thing? And I think part of it is like Overwatch outside of the competitive space isn't so much in the zeitgeist as much as like other games are currently. If you're not like super big into Overwatch League, no one's really talking about it in the same way as they were a year and a half, 2 years ago. Like,
no.
Like everyone's all that attention right now is being focused on to Fortnite. As of
Fortnite?
Right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some people view this, like I said before in the beginning, as like, oh, they're trying to kind of get the attention and the players back to Overwatch with this. And part of that might be true. Part of that probably is true. But I think it's cool, like that he is now like canonically queer in the world of Overwatch. I think we kind of have to consider that, like, not that he was necessarily coming out, quote unquote, but like, not everyone has the same opportunity or the same situation to where they can come out and be and not suffer any kind of like consequences, like for people that are that are still not out is kind of can be an act of mm-hmm. survival, and sometimes is, and the only way that they can kind of exist in the world until they're in a position to where they don't have to hide that part of themselves publicly. So mm-hmm. I think to that end, I think I don't have as much of an issue with Soldier 76 coming out, quote unquote, 3 years after the game has been released.
Yeah, I think there's actually a question in our Discord about this from Gladabro, which I'll just go, we're talking about it, so let's address it mm-hmm. right now. Says, what are your feelings about the Soldier 76 situation? Do you feel like they're just pandering because of recently bad press, or are you excited and pleased about it despite that? Which you've touched on, DJ. Mm-hmm. I think it's totally valid mm-hmm. if you are queer and out there and like kind of rolling your eyes at this. I understand that feeling for sure.
Absolutely, 100%.
For me, I'm like, I'll take all the gay yeah. table scraps I can get. Mm-hmm. And like, here's the thing. Blizzard's a business. Whatever they do creatively, like, who knows? And also for me, to some degree, who cares?
Right.
Like, Soldier could have been gay from the moment they started making the game, when they created him. He could have been gay before the game came out and they decided to like be like, that's part of his deal. He could have not been gay until like 6 months ago,
right?
Like whenever they got this stuff rolling, probably more likely based on how long this sort of stuff takes, like a year at least,
right.
One of the things that Jeff Kaplan has talked about, I think Kotaku maybe had this story today, about a girl wrote in about like more representation in Overwatch mm-hmm. and Jeff Kaplan like responded with a really heartfelt letter where he was saying like, I want to show normal people being normal. And by that, I mean like basically like queer POCs in the game, it being normal because
yeah.
it is normal.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to be a big deal and be news when this happens. Mm-hmm. Like I know that's going to happen now,
right.
but eventually I don't want it to be that because it isn't like, it's just normal.
Right.
It should be normal.
Right.
Which I agree with. So I kind of like this. Sure. It could be a thing that's like they're doing retroactively, but I also feel like with a living and breathing work of art, mm-hmm. that's also something that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the big thing. Like what you just said about this game being kind of like a living and breathing, like piece of art, like a piece of media, like that we're constantly consuming and it's constantly changing because it's about the players interacting with the game. And then Blizzard kind of either changing or adapting or reacting to what the player base is experiencing. And it could have very well been that like they didn't have plans for Soldier to be queer, or they could have been like, you know what, why not? What's keeping us from making him queer? Like,
well, and that's the thing yeah. is that like I think we get into like I was saying, like this is Overwatch is they're building a game that the lore is very much in the background.
Yep.
It informs a lot of stuff, but it's still like mm-hmm. it's still extra content that you have to like. Most people aren't going to go out and like read it or ingest it unless they're fans of it, right?
Right.
It's supplemental. So because it's a living and breathing game, as someone who has created things, right?
Yeah.
You might have a conversation with a friend, and they might say something that makes you go, you know what, like, it would actually be interesting to me, or I think makes sense, or it'd be cool if Soldier 76 was gay.
Mm-hmm.
And that just happens, right?
Yeah.
Now, like, and trust me, I'm all about side-eyeing corporations.
Absolutely. Because they're not our friends. Corporations are not your friends.
Not giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
As far as I can tell, Jeff Kaplan seems to be consistently acting in, like, good faith.
Yeah.
About all this stuff and seems to understand the importance of representation mm-hmm. in Overwatch. Like that's always been a thing they've been wanting to do. They've obviously had a lack of black women in the game. Mm-hmm. He has talked about the fact that that is a thing in the pipeline.
Yep.
And knowing how long it can take those characters to be made and come out, unless someone has an expose that comes out where it's like, oh, there's these black female characters that, you know, should have been ready before these other characters, but they're not. Then I'll yell at Jeff Kaplan about it. But based on the behavior that I've seen from that creative team, like whether or not they decided to do it last minute or it's always been the case, to me, it doesn't take away from the fact that like he's an old gay white man.
Yeah.
And that's a representation that's like you don't see that often. like, is just not that common.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty cool to see that there. And this is different from, say, something like J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter, right?
Yeah.
Because J.K. Rowling, like, retconned shit over time.
Yeah.
And that's like, okay, well, here's my books. They're all done. It's done and it's out. Cool. Oh, by the way, sure, Dumbledore's gay.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, nothing really in the books to hint at it necessarily.
Right, right.
But, like, and I mean, maybe, and I'm not, like, super tight on my Harry Potter knowledge, maybe there is stuff with Grindelwald in the books that, like, indicated mm-hmm. more so than just, like, headcanon for people.
Yeah.
But so eventually she was like, yeah, Dumbledore is gay. Cool. She had some creative input on the most recent Fantastic Beasts movie,
mm-hmm.
which Dumbledore is in.
Yeah.
Why the fuck wasn't there any content showing Dumbledore? Like, they very briefly touch on him being gay in that movie,
mm-hmm.
like, very subtly.
Yeah.
Like, talking about basically, like, his differences or mm-hmm. relationship with Grindelwald in, like, very, very light ways.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that explicit. Also, she kept an abuser in the movie. Like, So I think there's a difference to me between, like, going back mm-hmm. and, like, retconning these things after the fact
yeah.
versus something that is, like, we have consistently had a slow drip feed
yeah.
of this lore
right.
from Overwatch.
Right.
It's a constant thing. So for me, it's just a matter of them. It seems like a matter of them getting around to it and also just, like, shifting what they want it to be as they do it.
Right.
Which is normal in a creative process for, like, a live thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we have to, I think we have to kind of shift the way that, and not by much, like, but shift the way a little bit in how we, like, critique something like Overwatch, that it's, like, living and breathing live content. Because, again, like, that can change over time. So I think that's another conversation for, like, a different episode. But I think that, like, any inclusion of more queer folks in any kind of, like, majorly popular game, I'm here for that.
Mm-hmm.
Are there absolutely ways that we can be better about including that from the get-go and just, like, putting their foot down and being like, this person is queer, let's go ahead and, like, establish that from the jump? And not, like, in these, like, over-the-top, like, oh, this is their coming-out story. And, like, and it's this whole dramatic thing. Like, not, yeah, very much avoiding the, like, today on a very special episode of Overwatch, and it very much being just, like, a conversation that reveals an aspect of that person's personality through this auxiliary content that we're consuming, which I believe is exactly what they're doing with this backstory for Anna. So,
and I thought the way they did it was great. Yeah. Like, I thought the way that it's in that comic and the way it's presented is, yeah. like, I think they could have been a little bit more explicit about it, as opposed to, like, having to go online and have, what's his name? Is it Mark Chu? Overwatch? Oh, I'm trying to remember his name. Like, explicitly be like, Michael Chu, be like, he gay. But also, like, I don't know. I also, as someone who is, like, has always lived with my queerness in a sort of more quiet manner,
yeah.
it's also just nice seeing that show
yeah.
and stuff as well. Also, like, I don't know, if he was, like, I just think that that makes sense.
Yeah. For the character, I think it makes sense.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Soldier 76 is gay. Can't take that away from us.
So let's talk about some more gay shit. Let's talk about FlameCon.
Give him a pride skin. Speaking of
gay shit, let's talk about FlameCon. So today when we're recording the episode, so it's January 8th, and you'll be listening to this on January 9th. So for all of our listeners at home, so yesterday, FlameCon has opened their pre-registration for Artist Alley, or their quote-unquote exhibitor hall, because they don't call it an Artist Alley. That is just the Hall of Exhibitors. And this year is very different than how they're doing it from last year. They are doing a lottery system. And so what that means in terms of like, Artist Alley, exhibitor hall stuff for conventions is everyone submits an application, and they shake the dice, they put it through a random number generator, whatever that may be, and they just draw names. And whoever gets drawn gets to be in. And while a lottery system isn't necessarily a bad thing, because I get from the perspective that they want it to be as fair as possible. They want to, you know, have the playing field to be even. They want the playing field to be even as possible for like new creators or just other marginalized groups, to also be able to have a chance to get into the show. Because last year it was like artist alley tables are up. You go pay right now and you're in. So like, and that I understand is like, it's hard because if you don't have the money up right then and there, like you don't get a table so that you don't get to go. So
yeah,
I get that. Like, I think they're kind of going on two like extremes on each side. So basically the biggest problem is not that the fact that it's a lottery system with FlameCon this year, is that there is something in the application that really kind of threw myself and a lot of other creators for a loop. So for those of you that don't like do like artist alleys or go to conventions and things like that, so when you go to a convention and you go to artist alley and you view your artists and all that stuff, so sometimes you might see it's like a 6-foot table, but there are two people sitting at that 6-foot table, and there are two mm-hmm. separate people selling two separate sets of merchandise, art, fan art, whatever. So you share a table because one, it cuts down the cost of being able to pay for the table because that shit's expensive.
Like, also the FlameCon tables on the pricier side.
Yeah, FlameCon tables are pricey. As cons go. And FlameCon is also in New York City. It is in.
And it's 2 days.
And it's a 2-day convention, and it's in Manhattan. It's in Times Square.
Yeah, so the price of the table for just 2 days, which most cons are usually at least three.
Yeah.
And the location, given that it's going to be expensive because it's an expensive hotel to stay in, three is like kind of steep for that amount of time.
Yeah.
Just going to put that out there and, as we talk about this and, to put it in context.
Yeah, and to kind of put it in context, like, so Emerald City Comic-Con is a 4-day convention, and I think the tables are priced right around the same. I can actually tell you how much the table costs because I just got my table fee refunded because I did that Emerald City. I did a thing for Emerald City and what I get is a free table. So that helps. So where's my receipt? Here it is. So my table for Emerald City was $325 for that convention. That's a 4-day convention.
That's also, Emerald City Comic Con is like how many? 40, 30, like how many thousand?
Like, it brings in, like, I think like there were like 30,000 attendees.
It might be more than last, that.
Yeah, it's probably more than that. But again, numbers, not.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
What?
95,000 in 2018.
95,000 attendees at Emerald City Comic Con. So again, these are two different conventions at two different, like, levels. Like, what's really cool about FlameCon, which is what I really like about it, is that it's very much like a homegrown grassroots effort, and yes, all the people that work at FlameCon are all volunteers, and that in and of itself is amazing. And I don't want me kind of like ragging on this aspect of FlameCon like negate how fucking incredible that convention was. I've never been to a convention to where I felt more safe, to where I felt more like loved and inclusive and had a fan fucking tastic time. It was amazing. But
yes,
but the problem,
I mean, let's get that out there. Like,
I want to get that out there
like
right now before I get
it's great. And it's amazing to be in a room full of everyone, like where, you know, pretty much everyone else there is queer. Mm-hmm. If not, they're like an ally. It's I was talking to a friend about it. I compared it to like when I was in Japan.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to think about guns for 3 weeks. Yeah. Like, guns just stopped existing and I didn't have to think about it. Being at FlameCon was just like, I don't have to deal with anyone not understanding queerness.
Right.
And explaining myself to anyone or them like actively hating queerness and like being a threat. Like, it is an amazing thing, and that's amazing. But running a con well or fairly has nothing to do with being queer.
Yeah.
So like, so this aspect of it,
yeah,
is rough.
It's kind of shitty. So the big thing that was in the application is that you cannot share a table with someone at FlameCon 2019,
which is buck wild,
which doesn't make any sense because you can buy a half table.
Yes.
So it doesn't make sense. And
again, like, FlameCon is like 7,000 people. So again, compared to Emerald City, as far as just like, think about traffic, think about who's coming through, how many people are there that can buy your stuff, what the limit on like population of people that can come by your table to buy things from you to make money, because that's why you're there.
Yeah.
Massive difference. So the price of that table should be reflected in that.
Right. And like, and it's so much money. And then for both of us, actually, like, because you're coming from Atlanta flying to New York, and then me coming from California flying to New York, it's not a cheap ticket to get there.
No.
It's not cheap to get to New York, like, period, from where we are. So thinking about that, and then thinking about the numbers of how many attendees are at this convention, and then I'm thinking about other creators. I'm thinking about myself from when I first started going to conventions. Like, I would split tables with my friends. Like, I did Anime Week in Atlanta for years and would share Artist Alley table space with Tyson Hess and some of our other friends, so that, one, like, it cuts down the cost of going to these conventions, and two, it's like a great way to like get your work out there and to get exposed to other creators and other artists and all that stuff while not breaking the fucking bank to do it.
Like MAGFest, $200 for the table.
Yeah,
I believe. Like, that was it.
Yeah, and like, it's crazy to me. So like, the what, and so that brings me, that brings a couple questions, and I posted this on Twitter today. So like, what about people that are couples that work together on a single thing? Like, if they're not supposed to quote unquote share a table, then like, what do? Like, you,
which is very common.
Like, you buy two half tables and hope that you get placed next to each other. Like, what do you do?
Like, for the location of that con being an expensive location, for the length of the con itself being only 2 days, for the attendance being as low as it is, like, all of that's a lot.
Yeah.
To be saying it's $300 when there's a lot of cons that are much bigger, that are much cheaper. But I get it. Whatever. But then, like, that's fine. Expensive, whatever. But then to be like, you can't share a table, which is like, I don't see any point to that, besides they want to make more money off the artists.
Yeah.
Look, I don't see where that factors in. I don't see any other thing besides we want to make more money off people that want to have tables at this con than we already are by charging like quite a bit for what it is.
Yeah. So they released a response tweet thread about this today. So it says, first and foremost, thank you for expressing your concerns. We want to clarify something. Table sharing has not been allowed at FlameCon since last year. We removed it after finding some vendors were charging friends more than their share / scalping their tables at a higher price. Get that. We do allow sharing in the form of booking half tables. And if you want to make space for more queer people at the con, please consider choosing that option on the registration. We will work with you to make sure that you're a place with your friends / nice people. Lastly, if there are more than one creator for a shared piece of work, we do not consider that as two creators. It's a single listing or your artist name / group. For example, if you and two friends have a comic together, a book a full table. If you want your bestie to sit with you and each of you sells your stuff separately, book two halves. As each table purchase is one listed name / organization in the program guide. We hope that this provides additional clarity. For additional questions, please feel free to reach out to vendors at flamecom at gmail.com. Or
is a half table $150?
The
price?
That's a great question. I'm going to look and see what the price is for that right now.
I need to read that reason why we don't have the sharing again one more time. Because so I don't know.
It doesn't make sense. The half table is $150.
Okay.
So if you want to avoid having to be in the lottery system so that you can guarantee yourself a spot, you can pay for a premium table, which is $1,000.
Hmm.
And they don't have any details as to like what you get with that listed anywhere on their site. It's really frustrating to kind of see this, and it's unfortunate too, because like I hope that I get in, because I would love to go back to FlameCon. I really, really would. Did Aaron apply?
I don't know.
Okay.
I would imagine she did.
Okay.
Because again, the thing is, like, I want to stress this because I know there's like we have listeners that probably do stuff for FlameCon. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that con.
1,000%.
It was dope to be there last year.
It was amazing.
It was a good thing. Y'all, like, this, the way y'all are handling this doesn't seem like the right way to go. Like, if you need to make money on the con or subsidize money for the con, do it some other way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because to me, what you're doing here is, and Chris Kindred has a really good thread about this today, where it's like, so many diverse cons are, like, frequently built off the backs of their diverse guests and artists. Yeah. Like, they make their money by having them there.
Yeah.
By having certain artists there that people go to see and buy their stuff. By having certain diverse artists there that they go to see what they do.
Yeah.
And so when you make it harder or more of a... when you make it harder or more of a, like, hardship for these people to be there and do their thing, that really sucks.
Yeah.
Because this is, like, the people that you're celebrating, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, that con's great. I would love to, like, we've applied to do this show there before. Like, I think it's a great con. This is just a thing that came out that I think rightfully everybody was like,
has
yo,
a ton of questions and are like, what the fuck is happening? Yeah. Yeah. So, that provided some clarity, but I still think the reason's kind of like crap, but we'll see. We'll hope that we get into it. I would love to go again. If I don't, then that saves me from buying a ticket to New York, and I'll just save that to go to New York Comic Con instead. But, yeah, so we'll move on. We're already at an hour and a half. Oh my gosh. So just really quickly, over the holiday break, Atlus announced that there's another version of Persona 5 happening called Persona 5R. We don't have any details on that yet, but more details are coming in March. So what I'm assuming is that it's basically going to be like the Persona 4 Golden, but for Persona 5. And
that's what I assume.
And hopefully what that also means, since Joker is coming to Smash, which is crazy, hopefully that means we're going to get a Switch port of Persona 5.
Yeah, there is the teaser they showed had a PlayStation like logo thing right before the teaser started. So, I mean, what that tells me at least is that we know for sure that this is going to be on PS4. Yep. Does it mean it won't also be on Switch or somewhere else?
Correct.
Which is what I'm hoping happens, is that 5R is just, like, Sony's footing the bill for, like, or they're highlighting that it's going to be on the PS4, but that we're getting on Switch as well.
Yes.
Excited about that. What the fuck is Dragon's Dogma doing on Switch? I ain't mad at it.
Yeah.
It's just like, what?
So Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen is like the expansion that came out for Dragon's Dogma, which is an action RPG that was out on the PS3, which is really fun. Like, I really like that game a lot.
It's actually a good game.
It's a really good game. And it has this random ass
stuff.
It has that random ass really like J-poppy theme song. Which is super lit. But yeah, that's coming to Switch in April, which I'm super excited about that because I never got to play it.
Everyone in Dragon's Dogma looks like they're made out of potatoes, though.
Oh,
like,
yeah, the characters are fucking
like someone
shit.
Took mashed potatoes and molded those mashed potatoes into a human. Yeah. Also, I do love that. So Dragon's Dogma, the two things I love is you can throw everyone and everything. Go watch the there's a great Monster Factory episode or a couple episodes where they make a Dragon's Dogma character. Also, you can like climb on everything.
Yeah.
And it's the climbing system is so fucking weird and so goofy in it. So I'm excited that more people will get like exposed to it via Switch.
Mm-hmm.
All the new footage from the Grand Blue Fantasy versus fighting game and the action RPG looks really good.
It looks insane. Like,
that series is huge
in Japan.
There's so much money behind
it's
this.
It's so huge in Japan. And if anything is going to get that series popular in the West, it's going to be these two games. It's going to be the fighting game for sure. And then it's going to be that action RPG. And there is like a 15 or 20 minute video footage that they had recently of the action RPG. It looks amazing. It looks like it's going to be
really
so
cool.
Much fun. It's beautiful. And so seeing like anime stuff like in like HD, like 4K. Because a lot of games that are like super, like hyper, like anime stylized still kind of look like PS3 games, but just with like smoother textures and less anti-aliasing. Like the Tails games still look like PS3 games, but with just like slightly better textures and smoother graphics. But they don't look like they're PlayStation 4 games. Like, do you know what I mean when I say that?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Like, no, that makes sense.
Like, when you look at that, when you look at like a Tails game, and then you look at Kingdom Hearts, like, I mean, we're talking about two like different like levels here, but like Kingdom Hearts 3 looks like a PS4 game. There are some other like anime-esque RPGs that look like, oh, this looks like the PS4 that's benefiting from being on the PlayStation 4. Like the Naruto games looked really good. Mm-hmm. The ones that were made for the PS4 look really good. What else? And then obviously like Dragon Ball FighterZ looks amazing. So what's good to know about the Granblue Fantasy Versus game is that Arc Systems is making it. So the people that made Dragon Ball FighterZ are making this game, and it looks fucking perfect. It looks so good.
It's really gorgeous. I saw that and I was just like, give me
it's
now.
It's insane. So I'm very excited about that game. And there's like a girl that has like purple hair. I think she's a rabbit. And she looked real cool. I'm like, I want to play as her. She looks really fun.
Granblue has really good designs.
Those character designs are real good. So I hope those do well here. I think those are the two things that'll make Granblue like take off in the West, because the mobile game isn't even out in the US at all.
No, I don't think you can get it out here. And like, you can get the Japanese version, I think, if you're on Android, maybe, but I don't think you can get it over here, period. Yeah. Which is interesting, because there's other stuff like side games. Dragalia is here, which is
Side Games. And it's so good. And that game is good.
Yes. Side Games owns so many properties that are gigantic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dragalia is real good. I need to get back into that.
Dragalia is really, really, really good. I like it a lot.
And then do you want to take us out of the new session with AGDQ?
Yeah. Awesome Games Done Quick is happening right now. 24/7 speedrun streams. If you've never watched it, that's what it is.
Amazing.
It's a bunch of people from the speedrunning community. Usually they get like the best of their respective communities and games and have them do speedruns. They usually do it in blocks. So like there's a Castlevania block yesterday. I think there was like a Sonic block earlier today. Mm-hmm. There's always like really, really, really great moments that happen that are really fun. They opened with Hollow Knight this year. So that VOD is up. Like, usually you can watch it live on Twitch, but usually within like a day or two, VODs for sessions are up. The Hollow Knight VOD is like someone doing a speed run with really no glitches for the most part, in like less than 2 hours, which is crazy for that game. Really smart, really cool. And it's just wild. And all of the proceeds, basically the whole point is people donate to, I believe for AGDQ, it's the Cancer Prevention and Research is the, I'm trying to remember the exact group. Clicker to donate. The Prevent Cancer Foundation is where all the proceeds go to. Summer Games Done Quick, I believe, is usually all the proceeds go to Doctors Without Borders. Mm-hmm. It's great. I love it. It's one of my favorite things every year when it's happening. It looks like they're actually doing a Super Mario Brothers 3 like race right now. So sometimes it's not just speedruns, sometimes it's like speedrun races where it's multiple teams going against each other. Sometimes it's like certain modifiers, so it'll be like 100% or any percent, glitchless, no glitches. It's just really, really cool. And you can donate if you want to. If you go to the Yeti or Fangamer, they both usually have AGDQ merchandise that part of the proceeds of any purchases will go towards their stuff. The Yeti has really great artist-created shirts every year pertaining to games that are in the games that are being speedrun. There's a really good Metroid one this year I'm going to buy. And I think like $4. They're like, the shirts are cheap. They're like maybe $12. And I think $4 from every shirt goes to the charity.
That's awesome.
So it's a really awesome event for a really good cause. watch it, enjoy it, donate, buy some shirts from the Yeti and Fangamer to help support. It's good shit. I love it.
Hell yeah.
Do you want to just do some quick questions to close out? We got some questions in the Discord.
Yeah. So we got a question from someone that's been with us, I feel like, since day one. It's K-Throne. And K-Throne says, which anime do you want King Vader to hood up next? Did you watch the My Hero Academia one that I posted today on Twitter?
Yes, and I watched the Cowboy Bebop one, too.
Oh, my God. That remix for the Cowboy Bebop one.
Oh, that Bebop remix?
Was insane. It's so good. God, what should they do next? I guess if we're keeping with the Shonen Jump theme, maybe like Black Clover, since that's pretty popular right now. Either that or I think he's done like a Dragon Ball one before in the past, so we probably don't need that.
Utena. Dude. Just to be fucking, I don't even know what he would do with it. It would be so outside of the scope of like doing popular Shonen Jump stuff.
Revolutionary Hood Girl Utena.
Oh my God. Revolutionary Hood Girl Utena. She just dreams of being a hood girl.
Yeah, oh my God.
Of being a hood chick.
But like low key, the dude that was Todoroki in that video, I'm like, yes. That looks, I'm like, ooh, the two-tone hair with the dreads looks hella good. Yeah, it was, that was dope. That was so dope. I love those videos. That was the first thing that I saw this morning, and that just like brightened my day. I love that.
They're wild. They're so good. Honestly, I have the same answer to this question. This is from Shia Does Stuff. With Joker coming to Smash and others possibly on the horizon, who or what would y'all like to see as assist trophies coming to the game?
I want to see Morgana be an assist trophy in the game to have have like another Persona rep. Yes. And what's funny is that like since there's the Animal Crossing one where Cap'n is driving the bus, and if you get caught in the bus, you just go off the map. I was gonna think of the same thing, but with Morgana, it's the bus. It's like the bus that they ride in Mementos. That would be really fun to see for Morgana. Oh man, I just want to see what Joker's moves are. It's gonna be cool. I'm trying to think what else would I like.
I kind of hope that one of his moves uses like the Persona 5 menus.
Oh, I think that it will.
Like maybe for a Smash or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I just love the idea of that. I mean, I wonder if his Smash will actually be like the everyone comes in.
Yeah, the final Smash would be like the all out attack. It has to be.
Which means that they'd have to make models for. That means they have to make models for all of them.
Okay.
Do it.
Do it.
Do it. Never sleep. So here's the thing. They need to add. Utena needs to join Smash. They already have Sword.
Put Sailor Moon in Smash.
Put Sailor Moon in Smash. Put Utena in Smash. There's already sword wielders in the game. Just make her play like a Fire Emblem character. Easy. And then trophy assist, do Akio. Like that. This is a deep Utena cut, okay? Like when Akio like rolls across the hood of the car with his crazy fucking leg thing he does. Please make that like a trophy assist. He just drives in on a car and then does that leg thing and kicks you off the screen.
That's so fucking funny. My God. But, like, honestly, like, I was not expecting Joker. I thought when they were like, we've confirmed all the DLC for Smash Ultimate. And I'm like, oh, it's going to be, like, other Nintendo characters. Cool. When they said Joker, I was like, say what now? but I was very, like, resistant to, like, they're not going to put Sora in Smash. But honestly, just put him in Smash. Just put Sora in the fucking game at this point. Make Goofy be an assist trophy. Put Donald Duck in Smash as an assist trophy to where he just gives you damage because he always just takes this like goes through all of your mana in Kingdom Hearts.
Put Donald in as an assist trophy with a gun. Give Donald a gun.
Let Donald Duck say fuck in Smash.
Let him say fuck and shoot people. We all know Donald wants to. It's an angry boy.
Just put Sailor Moon in Smash, please. For me.
All right.
For me.
Well, I think that's it for us.
We're done.
I think we're done.
I think that's it. Huh. We are so happy to be back in 2019. Did you have it like a New Year's resolution? Is there something that you want to accomplish in the new year of our Lord?
No. I mean, all the normal stuff. I want to get in more shape. Mm-hmm. So my back isn't so bad. And I snore less, maybe. Because I definitely snore more now that I have more weight on me. And that's just, like, not good for married life. obviously, like, general, like, be healthy. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that we're doing this show more frequently.
Yeah, so we'll be able to because I'll have a couple of set days off coming up. So we'll be able to make more content.
We'll try to be good hosts and make that happen for you guys. It's going to be real crazy for me through January, but we'll try to make it happen.
Yes.
And honestly, like, I'm like, oh, so, okay. Not a resolution, but we did. So for New Year's Eve, me and Ed and Tom did a comedy piece at the theater for our New Year's Eve shows that night. And the comedy piece was basically we were declaring 2019 the year of the standing 69 and how all the ways that the standing 69 could help you with your New Year's resolutions. Just get it up there.
Oh, thank God.
And I think one of the closing lines was, what was it? One of the closing lines was something about, like, basically, 2018 was, like, not great. And if 2019 also sucks, you'll be sure we'll be sucking it right back.
Wow.
So try something new.
Try something new in 2019.
Try something different. Get nasty.
You know, that's should be the goal every year, just to get nasty.
Accidentally tombstone pile drive someone while you're trying to pleasure them. But please don't. You can go to the hospital. Please be careful.
Consent is sexy. Do that. Did you have anything else?
No. DJ, did you have any resolutions?
Oh, yes. I have a couple.
what are those?
The big one for me, like, I posted about this on Twitter, but, like, to in general, just, like, be kinder to myself, I think. I have a very big problem with, like, taking a step back and being like, you fucking did that, bitch. You fucking, like, crushed that shit. Like, when, like, the Dream Daddy issue came out, I'm like, here's my Dream Daddy issue. Yep. Thanks. And kind of, like, kept it moving. But, like, I tried to be very, like, deliberate about being like, wow, like, somebody fucking cosplayed as my design that I did of Craig for Dream Daddy.
Yeah.
Which is fucking cool.
Bitch, you have a comic coming out this year that you did all the art for.
It's coming.
that you drew.
Yeah, like, so, like, I'm just trying to be better about, like, not, like, being so shitty on myself when it comes to the stuff that I do. And, like, actually extending myself some grace to be like, hey, like, it's okay to take a break. It's okay to, like, relax and cuddle up with your fiance and not do anything.
Yes.
You can do that, and it's not going to be the end of the world if you don't, like, create something every second that you're up and living and breathing. So that, and yeah, just, like, getting back in the gym, I went for the first time yesterday, and that was rough, but like, I every time I leave the gym, I'm like, oh, I feel good. So, yeah, but it was definitely a rough start getting back into it, but,
just gotta remember that feeling.
Yeah.
Internalize that feeling,
yeah.
Feel good.
Yeah, just wanna
DJ, feel good. DJ, you have a comic coming out this year.
I do.
That you drew. Get yourself a Capriccio. Have yourself a bath.
Ooh. So you
enjoy,
know, they
yourself.
Make Capriccio, like, a white sangria version of that?
That's too gay
and
for
it's
me.
And it's way better. It's like,
is
yeah,
it?
It's like,
I can't even.
So, like, the one that we had is, like, I feel like it's very aggressive and acidic, like,
yes.
Going down.
Because it's red wine.
Right.
It's red, it's sangria.
Yeah. But, like,
what
the
is white sangria?
Is, like, I'm like, oh, this is.
That's bullshit.
This is delightful. Like, and I'm lit!
You like white wine, so I feel some ways about white wine. Sometimes it's fine. Most of the time it's like, I might as well go to, like, get myself a DQ Blizzard because it's so sweet. Okay, but Dairy Queen, if you make a Capriccio I just go to Cold Stone Creamery and they're like, okay, cool. What do you want for your mix-ins? And I just like crack open a bottle of Capriccio and pour it on the Cold Stone. Can you fold that? Can you fold that into the
fold
ice
cream? Fold that into the fucking ice cream. Where can they find you on the internet?
Can you fold that in for me, please? You can find me in jail for committing crimes at the local Cold Stone Creamery. This queer boy showed up and poured terrible rank ass sangria all over our store and then yelled and insisted that we mix it into ice cream. And when the cops came, he bit the cops. You can find me on Twitter at Robots, ROOBOTS. Instagram, I believe, is the same. You know what? Like, let me give it a shout out. Like, if y'all looking for some, like, some good, cute art, follow my wife.
It's at Erin Kipps. It's real good.
Her shit's real good. You got it's. She's great.
Also,
and her online store should be open in the near future again. So,
also, her package design skills
she goes off
second to none.
She goes off. She makes like packages for like you usually. I'm like, this is not even shade to people at cons who are like, I got these charms made. Here are these charms hanging at my table. Cause like, that's what 99% of people do. No, Erin's like, I'm going to print a backing card for it. And she made this charm. That's a Smash Brothers themed charm. That's like a bunch of the girls from Smash Brothers, like taking a selfie. And she's like, I'm going to make this backing card. That's like super selfie brothers. It's going to have like mystery item, which is like a random, she made a bunch of Smash Brothers, items. Stickers mm-hmm. that go like in the bottom behind the backing card, so you get like a random item like you would in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in like a nice plastic pack. She goes,
truly snapped with that one. It's amazing. It's amazing.
So go follow her. She's real good.
Do it.
Yeah, she'll probably hate that I told you to do it. She's like, please don't look at me. Please don't look at my
follow
heart.
Her. She's so good. She's so good. I'll do it all day. It's fine. And yeah, you can find me at Oh Hey DJ on both Twitter and Instagram. Hashtag brand identity, all that shit. You can find me there where I'm talking about gay shit, where I post a lot of like my shenanigans that I pull off in Smash Brothers. And you want to hear me yell about Sailor Moon and other gay shit, that's where I do that on a regular basis. And we love y'all so much. We're happy to be back in 2019. Let's get weird. And
DJ, play Smash with me.
I will. Let's play.
Play with me.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.